I want to talk to you about something that seems to be continually on my mind. It resonates with me a lot, and that is the difference between the world and the difference between the Bible. Specifically, not just about the Bible, but about what the Christian worldview should be. And the older I get, the more difference I see between the two. It's like almost everything that you can look at in this world is completely opposite of what the Bible says or what the Christian is supposed to be and how the Christian is supposed to act. And the world views Christianity differently. And the problem is, and the reason why I want to talk about it, is because the two are so opposite, you got a struggle going on. You got a struggle in the mainstream Christianity today that says we have to embrace and accept change. We need to take in the things of this world so that we can continue to reach the people of this world. And I just believe that's the wrong way to look at it because of the opposite attraction of both. How can we take the things of the world and mix them into the church, mix them into our lives and still hope to be pleasable to God, that it would be acceptable to God? You see, you cannot truly worship the Lord if you're still in love with this world. I know that's a little bit hard to read. That's actually a picture there. That's why it's a picture and you blow it up and then it does that. But the saying is true. We cannot serve the Lord truly in all aspects of our life, of what He wants from us and expects from us, and still try to hold on to the things of this world. It chains us down to it so that we cannot serve the Lord fully. It's like Brother Pat said in a sermon one time, there are some people who are just religious enough to be miserable. Because they want so badly to be a Christian, yet they want so badly to hold on to the things of this world. And while they're still trying to hold on to the things in this world, in this life, they can never unbind those chains to serve God to the fullest extent that they could serve Him. And that's a problem that I see and a lot of Christian lives today is the fact that so many people love the Lord, but they're tied down to the things of this world because they're not ready to part with them. They're not ready to serve the Lord fully. Oh, they believe in Him and they love Him. But there's something holding them back from serving Him completely. Think about the chains that you have holding you today. What's stopping you from committing your life fully to the Lord? What is it in this world that would stop that? Charles Spurgeon says, I believe that the one reason why the Church of God at this present moment has so little influence over the world is because the world has so much influence over the church. That's groundbreaking for his time, right? Because, I mean, that was way back then. Way before my time and our time, Charles Spurgeon said it. He noticed that there's a trend in society that rather than us, the church, having an influence over the world that we should have, that we're allowing the world to have an influence on us. And maybe because the world has had so much influence over the church in the years is the exact reason why. You can drive down this road and see a church and turn and see a church and go down a little further and see another church because the world has had so much influence over the original church and influenced people's minds and how people think and what doctrines will they hold to. Well, it's because, hey, we're influenced by the world and not by the Bible. And so we begin to change things. And so Charles Spurgeon later says this, that very church which the world likes best is sure to be that which God abhors. That's it. What are we doing? You know, you see countless examples of big time churches doing all these different things, getting all these different activities going, and you see this problem that comes into the church because of it. They say, we're only doing it because we're trying to get the people of this world to come into our church. I see what they're trying to do, and I can understand that from a point. But where do we take the line and say, hey, what do we do to get people in the doors that is not going to compromise the doctrine that we hold dear? Because whenever we change the doctrine, we change salvation. Whenever Paul instructed Timothy, he told him to hold fast to the doctrine. And if he would do that, he would save himself and those that hear him. But so many people today say, well, this doctrine that we have is offensive for today's world. It offends people to tell them the truth about what the gospel says. It offends them to tell them that they must be baptized in order to have their sins remitted. Well, that's what the Bible says. Why else would we say it? But it's offensive to say that. And so let's not offend no one. Let's attract people. I had a good friend growing up. He was Church of Christ his whole life. I didn't know his Church of Christ until after high school, graduation, and then I became Church of Christ, and then I found out that he was Church of Christ, and so one day I reached out to him, and I said, hey, how's it going? You know, I hadn't heard from you in 10 years. You know, I'm Church of Christ now, too. Are you still Church of Christ? He said, well, sorta. I said, what do you mean, sorta? He said, well, I go to what used to be a Church of Christ, but they took the name Christ off of it because Christ is offensive. They found, the elders of the church found that Christ is offensive to the community, and so they dropped the name Church of Christ. And I said, really? And you're okay with this? You're still going there. The name of Christ offends you? The world had influence over the church. Evil works, Jesus called it. John chapter 7, verse number 7. Jesus said, the world cannot hate you, but me it hateth, because I testify of it that the works thereof are evil. Oh, don't get me wrong. There's things in this life that are not inherently evil. It's not just automatically evil because it's in this world, but to hold on to the things of this world, to allow them to chain you down so that you can't serve God fully. What I mean is basketball evil? A lot of kids are in basketball or football, track, ballet even. All these different activities that are part of this world, you would look at it and say, well, that's not evil. But what about whenever we begin to say the softball tournament this weekend's taking precedence over the going to church this weekend? What are we teaching our kids that these extracurricular activities are more important than the Lord? We're chaining our kids down to the world when we do that. Because we're teaching them that the things of this world are more important than the things of God. That's where the works of the world become evil. James, in verse chapter 4, verse 4, he says, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that the friendship of this world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. What do we hold to and cherish and cling to in our lives today? Well, there's a lot of great things in this life that we love and that we enjoy. But whenever you really stop and you step outside of your box and you look at the world on the grand scheme of it, you know, you have people that have Super Bowl parties and things like that. And you don't go to church Super Bowl Sunday, you know. But I couldn't tell you who won the Super Bowl in 1983. Doesn't matter. I like college football a whole lot better than I like pro football. But I couldn't tell you who won the national championship so long ago. I know a lot of people in here like NCAA basketball a lot more than I like basketball. But I bet if we start asking questions of who won the March Madness so many years ago, except for Zane, and he's not here, probably none of y'all could answer, you know what I mean? But you see, what do we grab a hold of in this life and really cherish? What do we put before the Lord? Because whenever we really step out of our box and we start to look at the grand scheme of everything, the world will pass away and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of the Father abides forever. The things of this world are going to pass away. And the things that we held so dear in our lives in this world will be turned to ash, melt away in fervent heat. Enmity. It's implication of reason. It's opposition. That's what it means whenever it's talking about enmity. The things of this world are opposite. They're in opposition to the Lord. And so whoever clings to the things of this world are in opposition to the Lord. That's why we become enemies of it. It's the quality of being an enemy, the opposite of friendship. If we're friends with the things of this world, then we're an enemy with the Lord. We know the word enmity. It comes from Genesis chapter 3. When you first see it, I will put enmity between thee and the woman. Genesis chapter 3. The carnal mind is enmity against God. Romans chapter 8. So we know the word. We've read about it. We've seen it in the scriptures. That's what it means. It means that we're in opposition of, we're in difference of the opposite. And that's where we find the world at today in the Christian view, is that it is opposite of the Lord. And it has always been opposite of the Lord. Okay. I don't remember putting that in there again, but I did. Whosoever therefore wants to be a friend of this world makes himself an enemy of God. And so that would be the resonating question of the hour is, are you making yourself an enemy of God by clinging to the things of this world? Here goes another illustration for you. This is what we're doing to ourselves whenever we want to be a Christian, but we want to hold on to the things of the world. We're anchoring ourselves down to this world so that we cannot serve the Lord in the capacity that He wants us to serve Him. What do you got to do this morning to cut that anchor free from your life? So that you can serve Him. The Bible tells us, love not the world, neither the things of the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. The things that we hold dear in this life, he says, is not of the Father. It's of the world. Now look, he says, and the world passes away in the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abides forever. And so that's really it. I mean, whenever we put things in the proper perspective, we can see that none of the things of this world is really going to matter in the end, except for what we have done to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Because he that doeth the will of the Lord abides forever. So, that gets us to this. The wise, wise humans. The world believes that this is the smartest that civilization has ever been. In all of history, in all of human interactions, in all of recording data, they believe that we are now smarter than we have ever been. And that's where the term wise, wise human is. The world belittles you if you believe in Christian way of life, if you think that you should hold dear to the treasures that are found in the scriptures, and they will belittle you and say, hey man, you're narrow-minded. You're dumb enough to be a Christian, you know. Don't you know that that doesn't fit into society today? Don't you know that scientists have proven this or that? Oh, you're so narrow-minded. Why do you hold dear to this old book? And so, if you hold dear to this, you're opposite of the wise, wise humans. You're actually considered the dumb humans. I know that's not nice, but that's what you're considered by clinging to this book. They call themselves, if you want to know the word wise humans, it comes from Homo sapiens. Okay? So, that's what we learned back in science class, whenever I was in science class, you know, we were only Homo sapiens at that time. That's what we were taught anyway. That word comes from Latin homo meaning man and sapiens meaning wise. Well, they say that we surpassed the Homo sapien part of it. We're no longer just wise people. We're actually wise, wise people. And yes, that's actually what they said. So, who said that? Well, they said that. Well, who are they? Well, the scientist people said it, you know. The smart, smart people said it. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. And that's really it. Romans chapter 1 and 22 said that. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Why would they profess themselves to be so wise? They know it all. The word to the wise is this. In Corinthians chapter 1 verse number 21, for after that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. Isn't that it? Hey, we're actually the wise, wise humans. We know so much now. We know that this book can't be right because we know so much. The world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. Because whenever they look at you and they say, what do you mean you believe? That's foolishness. That's what it means. They think that you're a fool if you believe in this. It pleased God through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. And again, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Everything that they think they know. I mean, they're really working hard on knowing all this stuff. They're spending billions of dollars in research every year. I make a point to say that because of what we're going to lead up to in just a moment. In Job chapter 5, verse number 13, he says, he takes the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the froward is carried headlong. Oh, there's so many people that think that they're wise. They think they know everything. Have you ever known a kid that knows everything? I heard an advertisement the other day, talk to your kids before they become teenagers, because when they become teenagers, they know everything. I remember being that way. Oh, I know that, Mom. You know, oh, you don't have to tell me, Mom. I already know it. There's a good movie that I really like. My wife may not like it as much as I do, but there's a lot of jewels, I think, that are in it. There's this one episode, part inside the movie, The Forbidden Kingdom, where this guy, he wants to learn kung fu from this master of martial arts or kung fu or whatever we're going to call it. But he's sitting there and he says, you want some tea? And he says, yes. And so he puts out his cup and the master begins to pour in the tea into his cup. And he says, so when are you going to teach me the shadow kick? And when are you going to teach me this or that? And he's just sitting there and he's pouring his tea, smiling, and pretty soon the tea begins to overflow out of his cup. And he says, hey, my cup's full. And he's like, and he keeps pouring. And he's like, no, my cup's full. And he says, exactly. I can't teach you anything because you already know everything. You need to empty your cup first. And so he takes his cup and he throws it. He said, okay. Took him a little literal there, but that's what we need to do. We need to quit thinking that we know everything so that we can be taught something. That's what I find myself getting into a lot, is me thinking that I know what to do before I actually know what to do. And that's what the world thinks. A man, this is from the wise humans, a man sooner or later discovers that he is the master gardener of his soul, the director of his life. Of course, the opposite view is found in the scriptures where Jeremiah said this, O Lord, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walks to direct his own ways. And that's just it. You see the oppositeness of the world there. The world says, hey, sooner or later you're going to figure out that you're the one in control of your life, that only you can guide your direction. Only you can do these things. Well, that's true to an extent. Only you can do certain things. Lead the horse to water concept is there, right? Only you can do it. But can you guide yourself? No. It's not in man who walks to direct his own steps. James chapter 4, 13 and 14, he says, come now, you who say today and tomorrow we will go to such and such a city and spend a year, buy, sell, and make profit. Whereas you know not what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little while or a little time and vanisheth away. That's what life is. Our life here on this earth is nothing more than just a vapor. We don't know what's going to be on tomorrow. How can we guide our own selves if we don't even know what's coming tomorrow? Because it's not on us to guide our own selves. You see, we have an appointment that we all must keep, regardless of if we're wise humans or not. Every one of us will come to an end one day. That's the law of science. You know, we can't refute that. We're winding down. Hebrews chapter 9 verse 27 says, it's appointed unto man once to die, but after this the judgment. Every one of us has that appointment, regardless of our stance in life and what we're thinking of. We know who created the universe, but the wise humans say this. God did not create the universe. World famous physicist Stephen Hawking argues in his new book that aims to vanish the divine creator from physics. That was his profound revelation to the people. God did not create the universe. But if you ask him where it came from, he'll say, I don't know. Then he says, given the existence of gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. That's what he says. And then he will later talk about ice crystals and little germs or something that piggyback on top of ice crystals. It's all in there. But given the existence of gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. And so they've been spending billions and billions of dollars trying to duplicate this process using what we call the Large Hadron Collider. I don't know if y'all know of this. This is a very, very large machine that they built over in Europe to take, and it's a very, very big machine, much bigger than this block is right here. And what they did is they made this machine so that they can take these particles of dust and spin them around each other in a gravitational field to finally try to get the two particles of dust to collide so that they can create or find what they call the Higgs boson, the God particle. They say if we can find this right here, we know that as soon as we create this thing, it's going to spin around and spin around, and finally they're going to hit each other, the two particles of dust. And whenever they hit each other, we're going to be able to, some scientists said this is going to create a black hole. It's going to end the world as we know it. You shouldn't do this. But they said, oh no, we're going to do it. And they've been doing it, and they've been doing it, and time after time after time, it failed. They spent $6.4 billion to build the thing, and it cost them $1 billion to run it yearly. That's a lot of money wasted just to try to prove that God doesn't exist. Don't you think? A lot of money spent that could be spent helping people that are in need. I mean, natural disasters happen all the time. You see commercials all the time for people in other nations that need help, that need money, that need food. I mean, think about the good that they could do with this, all in an effort to show that God doesn't, they want so badly to prove to us, because it's foolishness to them that we believe. They spend a lot of money to do that. The Higgs boson, well, okay, why did we talk about this? They wanted to find a way to show how the universe was made. Now, this is from a very, very recent article, and whenever I came across it, this was concerning the CERN, the Higgs boson particle thing that they're trying to find. This was an article from their magazine, Hard Science. I actually took a clip of it so that y'all could see it here. CERN research finds that the universe should not actually exist. That's what they spent $6.4 billion to build a machine and run it $1 billion a year, only to come to the conclusion that we shouldn't actually be here. I don't know about wasted time or money here, but I've had an actual theory for a while that they should actually just hire a couple of major league pitchers, you know, you get a couple of them throwing fastballs at each other. Well, what they got to do is each one of them take a scoop of dirt and do their fastball at each other. And they could have collided dirt together all they wanted to, and it wouldn't have cost them as much money. And they would have came to the same conclusion. We don't know what we're doing. Well, we know we shouldn't be here. Isn't that something? But we know where we should be or how we came to be. In the beginning, John chapter 1, verse number 1 and 3. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was nothing made that was made. It pleased God through the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. That's it. So have you overcome the world today? As we talked about earlier, the world is going to pass away. The things of this world are going to pass away. The wise, wise humans don't have an answer for you, but we do. We can tell you that God does exist, that the universe exists because God put it in motion to exist. We didn't need a billion-dollar machine to spin around dirt particles and in circles hoping that they would eventually collide to tell you where the universe came from. But here's the deal, if the universe did come from God, and it is going to pass away one day, then we're going to have someone to answer to one day. We're going to answer to the Lord for how we have treated His Word, whether or not we chained ourselves down to this world because it was going to pass away, whether or not we made ourselves friends of this world, we're going to answer for it one day. What do you hold dear to today? Do you hold dear to the Lord, to His Word? Do you trust fully in it? Because in the end, that's what's going to matter. For everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. And so that's it today. Have you been born again? Have you been born of God? If not, everyone who has been born of God overcomes the world. And this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world except the one who believes that Jesus Christ is the Son of God?